This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lottridge-Anderson, President of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, Portfolio Manager at New Perspectives. They're both financial analysts. Ryder holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. You know, on Money Talks, we're here to answer your personal finance questions. And to fill time in between your calls this morning, we've got a couple of personal finance topics that we'll discuss. Contact us by email by sending it to money@mpbonline.org. We usually can't answer your emails on the air, but you will get a response when you choose to send in something via an email. And to start the show each week, we always like to talk about financial news in the news. So good morning, Nancy. We'll let you go first.
Good morning. Well, I think this whole bit of news about Donald Trump's company and the merger, and now this is the first day this new company is trading, can allow us to talk about some things that happened at this time. And one is called the lockup. So the lockup is the period of time, usually 90 days up to 180 days, 6 months. That's what we're hearing with this company, where if you are one of the executives, founders, huge owners, which he is in this stock, you cannot sell that stock. So that's been all the talk about, well, now he's worth multi-billions because of this. Why can't he sell it to settle this civil suit? And also probably cannot use it as collateral, except that his board, which is quite friendly to him because Don Jr. is on the board, could override that and allow him to do that. So that's really interesting. The other thing is the valuation. So the valuation put on this company is over $6 billion. It reminds me of the dot-com bubble in the late 90s, where all you had to do was open up a company with a dot-com and suddenly these huge valuations appeared. Last year in 2023, the first 9 months, Trump Media made $3.4 million in revenue, but they had expenses of over $52 million. So he lost $49 million and still gets a $6 billion valuation. So that's really interesting to see that kind of bubble going on. The other thing is something called the quotron or the symbol. So when you go public, when you have this new company, you get to choose your symbol. And most stocks are three or four letters, with the exception of something like AT&T, which is just T. So guess what he chose, Ryder?
He's got his initials, isn't that sweet?
Yeah, DJT.
It's a little monogram.
Yeah. So interesting things that we can learn about how all of that functions with IPOs, with new issues, and we'll just see how he's able to handle that.
So being a fan of Shark Tank, I'm very familiar with valuations because that's always a very contentious point.
Okay, sharks.
And it has to be based on, often it's based on revenue or it's based on the net income, the revenue less the expenses. But sometimes you just get pie in the sky stuff.
Yeah, if you just think, oh, in the future we're going to make a ton of money off of this, then you may be willing to pay a little bit more than it appears to be worth.
Yeah, and it leads credence to his argument that most of his wealth comes from his brand, because basically that's what this is.
Significant but brand
value. That would
there.
Make lenders a little cautious about lending against this ownership in this company, because it's, again, it can disappear very quickly.
By the way, if you're a Shark Tank fan as well, it airs quite frequently on CNBC. So it's like show after show after show.
Yeah, my husband would watch it on a loop, and I'm just like, please, no.
I just always like to, especially the older ones, you try to then find out whether that product ever really became something.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And it's a lot, I don't know. A lot of the stuff, though, does kind of go over my head, but it's learned a little bit about investing from that show. It's very entertaining. So, Ryder, what's on your mind this morning?
So we are entering the kind of, I don't know, the final inning of tax season, although it's going to go on forever. So I just want to say, if you are a CPA, if you are an accountant and you are listening right now, please turn off the radio and go back to work. this is a tough time for you, I know, but there's a lot of work to do. So I like looking at the tax filing statistics. The IRS publishes them kind of week by week, although they take their time getting those numbers out. The number of refunds so far this year is down a lot. 8.8%. It's down 8.8%. So that means people are paying in more than they expected. They did their tax withholding last year at their job, but they're having to pay in more than they expected. So there's a number of reasons this can happen. So if you have rising wages, so if you move to a higher paying job, maybe your withholding over the whole year wasn't adequate. If you had capital gains, then you weren't doing capital gains withholding there. Also, one to think of as well, for folks who are newly retired and doing withdrawals from IRAs, they're not necessarily withholding exactly the right amount of money. So last year was a big year in the stock market. So that explains a lot of capital gains activities. All those things can lead to higher payments, lower refunds. So it's just interesting to see how the actual payments in and out of the Treasury to people and from people kind of reflect on what was happening all last year.
But I bet Kevin got a refund.
I did indeed.
It did. He always gets a refund.
Because he deducts all these shoe expenses, which actually we were talking about earlier, a kind of common reasons to get audited. And you don't want to get audited by the IRS. No. Common mistakes that they'll send you a letter about. And a lot of times it's just math errors. You added up something wrong. You took twice a credit. This especially happens on large rebates and credits like earned income tax credit, recovery rebate credit, and child tax credits. You know, if you're like, oh, I actually had 7 kids last year, and they're like, well, you only had 5 the year before. Like, what happened?
Twins.
That's right. Just send them a letter. Twins, buddy. If you have missing income, because a lot of times a 1099 or a W-2, say you had a job for a month in last year and you just forgot to get the W-2 from it. You didn't think that you got a paycheck in 2023. The IRS is getting copies of a lot of these tax reports. So if they don't see evidence of it on your tax form, that's an easy one for them to get. Then folks who take unusual deductions, again, an unusual number of children, maybe you're doing business deductions when it doesn't really seem like you have a business, or you do have a business, but you perpetually have losses and never seem to make money. The IRS is going to
call it a hobby. That's what they're going to do.
They may call it a hobby. That's absolutely right.
And the IRS is woefully understaffed. And so
they're working on that, though, aren't they?
Well, they're trying. But it's very common for us to get calls from clients that get a letter from the IRS about a return they filed 2 or 3 years ago. So don't get excited. Yeah. Just, if there is something, it may take a while for that to show up. And often it's just some missing information.
And that's why it's very important to keep information that you use to put into your tax return. So all those files, all those 1099s, those W-2s, whatever you're getting, year-end statements from accounts, even after you close them out, we always like to make sure we're keeping and preserving client information for a long time, because sometimes we just need to go back and say, now what was the cost basis of whatever stock that you sold?
So I think I had mentioned on the air several weeks ago that I ordered a Stanley Cup. It has arrived, and I must say it's a nice item.
So have you got cold things in there or hot things?
Cold things. I keep my ice water in there, and it stays cold throughout the whole afternoon. It's kind of sleek, not too heavy, but solid, and it's got the fancy you push a little button to open up the place when you pour it, so it won't spill out. But I'm quite happy with it, and it was not that expensive. I bought one that was a little bit cheaper than the others, and I actually have customized it with a Mets sticker that I had. So I'm rocking it out with my orange Stanley Cup.
But does it fit in the cup holder of your new car?
Actually, it did. I was kind of surprised about that. When I brought it into work, it fit right in there as if it were made that way. So One other thing is flying Southwest next week. Do either of you have any tips for when to jump on to check in so that you don't get stuck in the middle seat or whatever? I mean, any thoughts on flying Southwest?
As early as possible. They usually open up checking in 24 hours right before the flight. Sometimes you'll get an email. Sometimes you just have to remember.
Well, I'm not worried about Southwest right now. I'm worried about Disney World. We're planning the big trip, and I'm just shaking in my boots because apparently there's a lot more to it these days than there was years ago.
It's amazing to me. There's a whole cottage industry about books and things written about how to get around Disney World.
And you can take a course.
The one thing I remember that seemed to be a good idea was it said, you know, on certain days, each of the three parks opens early. And so you would think, well, that's the day to go to that one. When this, the advice was, go to one of the other ones on that day because everybody else is thinking about we're going to go to the early one. But the other funny thing I remember
that's
was
how they get
you get there, you know, right before it opens, and then there's a rope. Or this was years ago, so they might have updated this procedure.
They still do it.
Okay, and so they drop the rope.
Drop the rope.
Everybody, I mean, men, women, children, grandma, grandpa,
run.
Just makes a mad dash. And there's another one.
All the parents trampling their children, shoving them out of the way.
It's like, you know, take a left by the Mickey Mouse thing. It's a shortcut to get to where you want to go. So, but like I said, a lot of those, you know, they're well-researched. And so if you're planning your trip, you should probably get one of them.
My Instagram feed is full of it right now.
So I do have this Southwest app, so I believe that it'll alert me, but I'm going to try to jump on there as soon as possible because, I don't know. The middle seat's not that bad, and plus I'm checking my luggage, so I only have one small carry-on item, so it shouldn't be too bad, but I do like the aisle seat. That's another one. Do you have a preference on?
Window.
You like
time.
The window? Mm-hmm. Nancy, what about you?
Window behind the wing. Unless I'm in the front.
No,
like the front
I don't want to see that wing. I don't want to see anything like that. I don't want to look out the window. There might be storms. I just need to be beside somebody who will hold my hand.
Leaving our airport, we're often on a very small plane. And so sometimes I'll get lucky and be in like one of the first seats, which it's kind of like being in first class, except it's the same as all of the other ones. So I like that, the very front by window, or not the very back. I have been in the very back when you can't recline your seat at all because you're in the bathroom. But back of the seat, you know, theoretically it's a safer place. And
Statistically, because I'm the same way. I sit in the back part of the plane. I like the aisle because I like to be able to get out quickly when the plane lands. I've seen that's supposedly statistically that's a little bit safer area. Plus, you get to chit chat with the flight attendants because they're
back there
doing their thing.
That's true. So, I'm always watching the flight attendants during turbulence. Are they nervous? Or are they just going about their business?
Well, sitting in the back, it makes you kind of be a little calmer about everything because you know you're going to be on the plane for an hour longer than everyone else. So you're just like, well, you know, I guess I'll just kind of make the most of it. Read my little book. Check out the in-flight magazine. I don't know they have those anymore.
Yes, they do.
Fantastic. Read the safety information over and over.
But someone has always done the crossword puzzle. And about the safety thing, I always have halfway paid attention. But after that thing where the door blew off on the I was like.
Let's not talk about those right now when we're getting ready to fly.
It's called a convertible. Guys, this is normal. Look, people do it with their Jeeps all the time, okay? I'm sure we can do it with a Boeing.
We'll start talking about some things, personal finance topics, but we're really looking for your personal finance questions. You can always send an email to money@mpbonline.org. We'll be back with more of the program after this. You're listening to Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. Our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org, is one way to hear past broadcasts. You can also download the MPB Public Media app and listen on your iPhone or Android phone to all the local MPB Think Radio programs on your schedule. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotrich-Anderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. They're both chartered financial analysts, and Ryder holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. We're looking for your personal finance questions this morning. We also have some topics to get to. We do have a caller on the line. So off we go to Biloxi, and we say good morning to Richard. Richard, it's your turn, so go ahead.
Thank you. Question about required minimum distributions. Can I have my required minimum distribution paid to a charity and avoid having to include that amount as income?
Yes, yes, Richard, you can. Wow, sometimes I feel like people tee something up that just we really like talking about and we really like doing. But yes, you can have money sent directly from your IRA to a charity. This is very important when I say directly. Typically, your custodian, say you have it at Schwab, Fidelity, what have you, and this has to be an IRA. It can't be a 401k. Although that rule may be changing, so don't, again, if you're an accountant or CPA listening to this, turn the radio off. But you can have them make the check out directly to, say your church, say the Red Cross, Salvation Army, whatever charity you are sending it to. You can have that check sent to your house and you hand deliver it, or you can have it sent directly to the charity. We have folks that do both. And the benefit there is you are allowed to do this qualified charitable distribution. The amount this year, I believe, is $100,000, but it's meant to be inflation adjusted. Maybe starting this year, maybe starting next year. So that should rise. That's $100,000 per individual. It does not matter how large your required minimum distribution is. The qualified charitable distribution has a separate limit. So you can actually send more than your RMD, or you can send less. It does not matter. And you can start doing that charitable distribution at age 70 and a half, which is the old RMD age. Required minimum distributions have increased in age, but the qualified charitable distribution you can still do earlier. And yes, it is just simply not included on your income for tax purposes. Importantly, it is also not included in your income for Medicare premium calculation. So if you've got a large IRA, you're getting close to your 70s, you're a generous person, you should really start thinking about this, doing some planning around that, you know, kind of figuring out where your income is, and if it's worth it just to send directly from your IRA. That way you can keep claiming that large standard deduction and still be just as generous as you were before, save on taxes.
Well, and we usually encourage people we work with to look at what they normally give anyway. Go look back at your records. And if you're normally giving to some various charities, and then use what you're supposed to be taking out of that IRA instead. And so we really have to encourage them to do that. And typically, every institution where you have those IRA accounts require a special form to be filled out for that to go out with all the information about the charity on that. We have people who want to send out monthly amounts or quarterly amounts, or do it once a year, even small amounts like $100. We work with them on that because it makes perfect sense to do it this way.
A follow-up question. Can I then take that IRA amount as a charitable deduction?
No.
Okay.
No, you can't do both. If you wanted to take it as a I don't know that there's a scenario where it makes sense to distribute from your IRA and then take it as a deduction, because you would need to include it on your income to do that. And then you're just raising your income by the exact same amount, when again, you might have been able to take that very generous standard deduction and get all the benefit of that charitable giving.
Right. And with our increase in the standard deduction for people in a joint household, if you are retired, you're talking somewhere around $30,000. Most people don't even reach that amount because many of them already have their houses paid for, everything done, unless you have huge medical expenses. This is just another way to get a tax advantage.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard, for your call. This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We're looking for your personal finance question. If you have one ready to go, you can email the show by sending it to money@mpbonline.org, and we'll give you a response to any email questions that you send in. So while we wait for some more phone calls to come on the line, looks like there's one being queued up as we speak. I was going to talk about some scams that you could try to avoid, or you should try to avoid, because they're trying to get your banking account information. So, Ryder, the first on the list is a familiar term, but if you could remind us what phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G, is.
It's like fishing, except it's cool. no, phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Phishing is when you kind of imagine a scammer out there casting their line into the pool of potential victims and trying to hook somebody. So, or trawling their net, maybe. Maybe they're a commercial PH Isherman. And so you what you see this as is a phishing email. It's an email that purports to be from someone who you do business with or maybe do business with. Very frequent is a credit card company or a software company, and they say, "Oh, you're they provide in that email some reason for you to reach out and contact them. And it's, "Oh, we couldn't process your payment," or "You're up for renewal on this," or possibly the worst ones, the easiest to spot ones, or "You just won a Stanley Cup that is going to fit into your car cup holder and you're going to love it for your ice cold water." And so they just give, they prompt someone to click on something in there to call them to take that hook, to take that bait, and you are caught at that point and they just reel you in.
The one I've seen most frequently lately is the kind of the phony invoice. It's like, you know.
Oh, I'm getting a lot of those.
Yeah. Getting a lot of those, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing, they're not trying to get the $400 in the fake invoice. They're trying to somehow get you to contact them so they eventually can get
you. Well, they want you to click on that link. And once you do, then probably what's happening is a virus is then getting into your system and gathering your private information.
Yeah, there's definitely all sorts of approaches. Some of them may indeed just be trying to get you to pay an invoice. That is a classic scam. I mean, people can do that in the mail, sending people invoices. But yes, clicking on a link and unwittingly downloading a virus, clicking onto a fake web page and giving your real login credentials, all sorts of different things that could happen. But the idea again is just they've thrown a hook out there and they're seeing who's gonna take it.
And one of the things I've learned to do is click on the information about the sender. And a lot of times it's not, you know, Best Buy or wherever. Mm-hmm. It's so-and-so-and-so-and-so at gmail.com. And so then it's like, that's a clue. And then the other thing that gets me is the recipient list is like 50 people long. And it's like, it's amazing that all 50 of us have the exact same amount due on this phony invoice or whatever. So
why don't you try emailing those folks? "Hey, guys, I paid this." Or, "Has anyone paid this yet?"
We've got a caller on the line, so we're going to go next to David, who calls in from Horn Lake. You're on the air with us, David. Go ahead, please.
I got a question. Through sheer ignorance on my part, I work for a Fortune 500 chemical company, traded on the Dow Jones Industrial, and they had an employee stock ownership plan, which I thought I was being smart, loyal, dedicated employee by buying company stock. Well, I got downsized, and they offered me a buyout, and they were good on that part. But my question to you is, I moved a couple of times since I left the company, and I didn't keep an update info on my company since I left it. I thought it was safe and secure. Anyway, they filed bankruptcy. I lost 99.9% of my company valued stock.
Yeah.
My question to you is, I'm over 59 and a half, so I don't have to worry about the penalty tax for taking money on my 401k. My question to you is, can, when I start taking my money out of my 401k, can I deduct all the losses that I lost on the company stock plan that I lost all that money on against my taxable income? And if so, what is the time limit for taking the losses?
Oh, well, that's a very particular question, because what's really starting to tug at me, Ryder, is what if part of that was,
what type of account was that?
What type of account was it? If it's strictly retirement and you chose to put your retirement funds within that stock, I'm not sure that you can. And it could be that if the company was putting their portion in, there might be some ability to do that. It's very questionable. Now, I will say to you, anybody who uses company stock within their retirement plan, you need to be very careful. Or if you participate in an employee stock plan, an ESOP plan, then as long as you work for the company and you have feet on the ground, you have a sense of how well that company is doing. Once you leave, you no longer know what's going on there. And so it's usually safer at that point to make adjustments to the investment plan. But as far as what you can do in particular, this is a very particular situation. I think you need to talk to your CPA. I have very serious doubts with it if it is within strictly a retirement account.
Yeah, typically those are within retirement accounts. If it's not, yes, there's a possibility that you can take some losses. There's minimal deduction against your income, and I don't know that there's a limit on how long you can do that for, though.
There shouldn't be. They should be able to roll over those if you can.
Yeah, the type of account is that's what matters here.
Yeah.
All right, David. Money Talks is MPB Think Radio's personal finance broadcast. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotcher-Janderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. We're here this morning to answer your personal finance question, and to fill time between the calls, we've got a couple of topics that you might find of interest. When you email money at mpbonline.org, we'll send you a written response. So, Brother Daniel is on the line from Pascagoula. Good morning, Brother Daniel. What do you have for us?
I want to thank y'all for educating Mississippi and keeping it together.
Good morning.
I really appreciate that. I want everybody to understand, listen, please refer your family members to MPB. It is very important. This is another educational program that we don't get on prime time on regular channels. I'm telling you, everybody, please make sure your children, people you know, listen to this channel. Because today what I wanted to talk about was the advertisement on about when they say the government has money for you, they ain't telling you about, with that Medicaid, talking about how they can get you a check and what it is as a veteran. When I call, and I told them I was a veteran, they hung up. What it was, all they do is get you discounts on your medical and want to take over your Medicaid and different programs, the Medicaid that you do. Be very careful. I wanted y'all to explain about that. That's a big scam right now. So people see that big money, and they give those people all the information. I had three seniors just had a nervous breakdown for losing their information and some of their money. Can you talk about those promotions? It's the one about when they say we can get you a check, get you some money, if you are not on Medicaid or not on whatever the program is. I see the advertising on TV, but I see a lot of it on YouTube and some of the media.
I'm not sure. Well, Brother Daniel, I'm not sure what you're referring to. The only thing I can think of is Medicare Part C, because we mm-hmm. see a lot of advertising on that program. That has to be someone who is Medicare eligible, 65 or older, who can participate in that. And a large percentage of people are using Medicare Part C. We usually caution people about that because that varies by state. You may be limited as far as the providers. So be careful. They will say to you, you know, you're going to have all kinds of benefits. You're going to have a gym membership. You may even get a check for the premium, or it's not going to cost you anything. Make sure you understand what the benefits are before you jump into a program like that. And we do talk to people all the time about Medicare and the parts of Medicare and what fits their needs.
And I would say it's very effective marketing, because it's Jimmy Walker was on there, and, you know,
right,
William
yeah.
Shatner. So it's all people that who are entering that age would recognize as maybe being trusted sources, I guess, or at least someone they would know. But it's interesting. It's one of those commercials where there's a lot of small print at the end, and that always makes me nervous.
Well, remember, these are private companies, and they are approved to offer this, but there may be limits to your benefits, so be careful. We especially caution people who might be traveling from one state to the next, that you're going to run into some problems because they have a defined group of providers that you're supposed to use. And if you go outside of that, it may cost you.
This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. We're looking for your personal finance questions this morning. Before we go to our next call, it looks like we have a message coming from Abram, our producer in the booth.
Yeah, I'm looking through. The AARP has an article about 8 different scams that involve Medicare. And the first one is people are saying, or there's scams that say that they're offering COVID-19 tests and they'll send it to you, but you have to send in your Medicare information, and then they'll take the, you know, from that bank of, you know, whatever your card has and stuff, and they'll do that. They'll send you fake bills for diabetes supplies. They'll send you for medical equipment, genetic testing, hospice fraud, all sorts of stuff that they'll take advantage of seniors for. So,
and again, it's them basically trying to trick you into giving information that you shouldn't be giving out and making it look official. So,
exactly,
Medicare is an important decision to make. I know that, and we might want to have someone on again, but you really do need to study and look at all the different options and plans and things.
It's very complicated, and but it's still great.
We've got a caller on the line, so we're going to the Delta to say good morning to Lisa. Lisa, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yes, since you all were talking about scams, someone is trying to scam my grandson, and he's very diligent at looking at. He gets paid weekly with one of the major convenience stores here in the Delta. And what they've been doing is going in his Paycor account from the company some kind of way and changing his bank account information to Wells Fargo banking account information, so that when his check is deposited, it'll go over into this Wells Fargo account. And it's happened like 3 times, 3 weeks in a row. He's caught it. He's gone in there and like changed it back to his own banking system that he uses. He's reported it to the human resources of his company. And here it is happening again this week. And I'm just wondering how do they do this, or is there someone we can report this to in the state of Mississippi that will really check into it? I wonder if it's happening to other people. I don't even know that.
Yeah, so this is very interesting. So somebody is essentially redirecting his paycheck, and from what you're saying, possibly getting access to his Paycom. So Paycom does process his payroll for tons of folks. So logging in there somehow. So a couple of places that could be happening you want to think about. And this is probably a good one for the tech show too, because this is classic computer scam type stuff. You know, possibly they're getting access to his actual personal account. In that case, changing the password, making the password more complicated. I don't know that Paycom offers two-factor authentication, where essentially they'd send a text message or they'd have you type in a secret code when you log in. But those are ways to secure his own account and prevent people from logging in there. Places are pretty good at preventing unauthorized logins to his user ID, so that would be a little unusual if that were happening. But of course, a scam like this is a little unusual. I also do find it amusing that they're redirecting it to a Wells Fargo account, because Wells Fargo famously was just opening up accounts for people. Who knows? Wells Fargo might have opened up an account for him. The other place is it could be happening from within the company. So that's kind of a weird possibility, but like if he has secured his own account, that could be where it's coming from. And one thing to do, again, and this might be something for the legal show, is have a strongly written letter from a lawyer, so they have it on record that he has directed them not to change his bank account. And if they change his bank account again and they send his paycheck to the wrong person, that is on them and not on him. That's not necessarily going to stop the bank account from getting changed. But if there comes an issue down the line when he's missing some paychecks and they're saying, oh, sorry, that's all your fault, then he can point to that letter and say, no, it is not my fault, and I very much told you it was not my fault, and it is very much on you. Let's see. What was the other ones I was
thinking
going
of? To suggest even filing a complaint with the Attorney General's office.
That's probably a good place as well.
And at least you go on record. They may know of other people, as mm-hmm. you say, who are having this same problem. And if there are several, they're going to be investigating that.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, being on record, as Nancy said, with more places is important. And it could be as well. I'm glad he has sold his HR. Again, if it's happening from within the company, who knows if that's even effective. And that could be a thing where Paycom themselves, you know, not his company's HR, but Paycom is a large company out, you know, separate from his company. They could possibly tell, you know, if it is just someone logging in some way, they can probably tell where that login is coming from, if it's coming from his login, even where that computer may be located. So they might be able to help him get to the bottom of it as well. And again, you know, reaching out to Paycom support in some way could be a good way for him to learn, okay, are there better security options for my account? So those are, yeah, that is tough. You don't want to miss somebody's paycheck, especially when there's the risk that they do send it to the wrong account and he doesn't catch it in time, or it just simply doesn't get corrected and somebody blames him when it is clearly not his fault.
That's some high level fraud.
That's rough. I don't like to hear that.
Abram is the host of the tech show, and I think you want to jump in again, Abram. Go ahead.
Yeah, Paycom, I'm seeing, has had trouble in the past couple of years with data breaches. So definitely go to Paycom support. Apparently, there's a class action lawsuit against them currently.
Wow.
For not protecting or having so many people's data stolen from their sites. So definitely go to support, and then they can figure out, like Ryder said, where that login is coming from. Because typically, if you have a login from a distant place, they'll definitely notice and recognize and flag it.
Yeah, and I mean, again, securing your own login, because that is a very common way for someone's account to get compromised. There's a hack where somebody has a list of usernames and passwords, and your name is on that list. If all you do is change your password, you've done 95% of the work to stop that trouble from happening, because folks who are stealing information in this way and folks who are, you know, redoing it, they're not doing it because they enjoy the hard work, right? Like, if they run into a wall, they've got a list of a million other passwords to try. They'll just move to the next one. So hopefully a little more security on his part will solve the problem. But like Nancy pointed out, giving notice and having it on record in more places just in case it gets bigger and he needs
We also on Everyday Tech vastly encourage setting up multi-factor authentication, which every time someone logs into your account, it'll make sure it texts or it'll text you for a verification code. Mm-hmm. So always enable that. We encourage that big time.
All right, Lisa, thank you for your call. This is Money Talks. We'll continue looking for your personal finance questions. If you have one, you can email the show. Send it to money@mpbonline.org. We're glad you found our show, Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lottridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. If you have a personal finance question for us this morning, still some time to work it in if you're quick. You can always email the show, send it to money@mpbonline.org, and we'll respond in an email form to any email questions you send our way. So we've been talking about some scams that people use to try to get your banking information, and the next one hits close home to me because I was almost a victim of it. We talked about phishing, P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Now there's vishing, V-I-S-H-I-N-G, and that's when you get a call from someone pretending to be someone. In my case, it was supposedly my banker. There was supposedly a bogus charge, and we needed to shut that down, and of course, I would need a new PIN number. And so I blindly, you know, I went to the site.
Oh, give yourself some credit. I mean, they usually call. You're busy. You're in the middle of something, and you're not stopping to think.
You're right, yeah. Because that's what happened was I was pretty good about not answering calls that I don't recognize. But for whatever reason, I answered that one. And you're right. And then as it goes along, they knew enough of the stuff to make it legitimate for me to go along with it. But I do think I feel embarrassed because after it was over with, it's like, well, how did they get your PIN number? And it was like, well, I gave it to them voluntarily.
Yeah.
But fortunately, in my case, I was smart enough that after the call hung up, I thought to myself, they usually don't do things this way. And I went ahead and called the bank, and it was like, no, we didn't contact you. And the way my story went, when I was on the phone with the banker, they said, oh, look, there's now a transaction for $1,900. You know, did you withdraw that money? I was like, no. So
yeah.
I was this close, but we shut it down. And so the thing is, just stay on guard. And most phones have some sort of blocking program, you know, to block spam calls. I've got that. But if you see a number.
Yes, my phone blocks all calls. I don't answer them.
Yeah.
If it's not a number that's in my phone,
right.
I just don't answer. They can leave a message.
And actually, I've done what helps me is I've got a special ringtone for the people that I know. And so if it's the robot thing,
that's very good.
But if it's the regular one, I'm like,
I've had some of those for people who's like, oh no, don't pick that one up. I recently had a medical insurance company call. They called the office rather than my personal phone, even though it's through my personal account. And they want to start talking to me about medications. And I stopped them and said, so what's my member ID or my policy number? And they couldn't give it to me. Okay, you want to talk to me about my medications? What are my medications? Well, we can't give that to you because of HIPAA. I'm like, well, you called me. So I was suspicious enough, and I'm getting a little bit better because I've had so many things happen. And I hate to be this way, but I am a little suspicious. And always it's a good idea if somebody calls you claiming to be from a company, an institution, insurance company, whatever, say, I will call you back. And then don't use the number they gave you. Go find a separate number and call directly.
And then go find a payphone in an undisclosed location. Take your quarters.
That's right.
Yeah.
To really be careful about that. And that's how they catch you even with emails, because they'll put a phone number in there and you think, oh, well, I've got to call the bank. And you call that number.
Absolutely.
And it's not the bank.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. That's like clicking a bad link.
It is.
Well, and I've said this before, and I think this is true. It's a shame that all this has stopped, because legitimate ways for businesses to contact you by the telephone or by email have. And I'm in love with you, Nancy. You've got to be suspicious of every time because of all the scams that are out there.
And we've been really frustrated in our office because we do send out mass emails to communicate to our folks about market conditions, newsletters, those kinds of things, and now they're grabbing those lists, and it will come through our client's email saying it's my name. But like you say, when you hover over the email address, it's not my email. Mm-hmm. And so people are clicking on links that are opening them up to all kinds of things.
The other one to be aware of, and I'm fortunate that I don't think I've ever encountered one of these, but it's the ATM skimming. So it's where the fraudster actually attaches something to the where you stick your debit card in there, and it's able to kind of, I guess, somehow get the information from that. And if you ever have trouble kind of sliding the card in, I think the advice is to go find another ATM machine.
Well, and that happens a lot at convenience stores, gas stations. Happened to my husband, where, you know, you're traveling, you stop at a place you don't usually stop at, and then pretty soon you start to see charges coming through.
And the other one I've seen, too, is where there's then also someone sort of positions themselves, you know, out behind the scenes, as it were, and so that they can actually try to get.
Hey, what about that guy taking pictures of people's airline tickets and IDs to get on the plane? Did you hear about that?
Mm-mm.
No, we were just talking about taking a flight. Maybe you could do that instead of buying a ticket.
Just stand there and use your phone to, you know, take a picture.
Somebody's got a better boarding pass than you. Just
first class, yeah.
Another suggestion, and this makes sense even if it's a skimmer or not, but, you know, be a little bit more stealthy when it comes to putting your PIN number in there. Maybe you kind of block it forward or put your hand over it or whatever. And, you know, some of these things like, well, that seems kind of silly. But it's kind of like, again, as we've been saying, you know, these days you really can't be too safe. And so anything you can think of to make it harder for someone to steal that information, I think that would be a good idea. So let's see, what else? Any other scam? Tell me about this. So the guy was taking pictures of other people's.
He was in the airport. Apparently, he wanted to get on a particular flight. He was on the standby list, and they had video of him using his camera and he did it to two different people. Took pictures of their boarding pass and used it to get on the plane, and now he's facing several years in prison.
Well, good for
just
that.
Because he wanted to get somewhere sooner.
Wow.
This is not a scam, and I've never done this, but my mean sums. I've often thought about doing it at a restaurant where it's a long list. And
you've thought about doing a scam.
Oh, yes. I'm Joan's party of four.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's the movie? Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where he's like, you're the sausage king of Chicago. Why, yes, I am.
Or the other one's even better is you see five or six names and come up and say, we're the Jones party. We're tired of waiting. Go ahead and take our name off the list. But I've never done that.
No. Shame.
We're supposed to be giving our listeners good ideas, Kevin.
Evil me will go back in its place. That's going to wrap us up for today. Money Talks is a production of MPB Think Radio, funded in part by generous financial support from you, our listeners. And thanks to everybody who made contributions during our fundraiser last week. To hear today's show or a previous show, you can visit moneytalks.mpbonline.org or listen to the podcast by searching for Money Talks. So for Dr. Nancy Lotcher-Janderson and Ryder Taff, I'm Kevin Farrell, inviting you to join us every Tuesday at 9 for Money Talks, heard only on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.